3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders, past and present, of the Kulin Nation. We recognize their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your hands.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to the Monday Breakfast Show here on 3CR Community Radio for Monday, the 23rd of February. I'm Rob, and for the next 90 minutes, we'll be bringing you a number of segments covering the world of radical news. Thank you so much to the folks at the Think Again show for another great episode. Obviously, that's the version that you hear before this show is a repeat. You can hear them live on Friday mornings from 10 till 10:30. Yeah, I always love driving in and listening to that show. Really helps me get into the mindset of hosting a radical left radio show. I was seeing a lot of traffic control crews setting up this morning. So shout out to the traffic controllers. Literally doing such important work to help keep workers safe, and it's so necessary. So thank you so much to all of those people out on the streets very early this morning. It's actually kind of cold for late February. But listening to Think Again, particularly this morning, I really liked at the start how they were talking about sort of people's not inability, but It can be hard to, I definitely agree with what they were saying. It's like, it can be hard to imagine an alternative to the world that we currently live in, right? And I've been reading this book, The Exhausted of the Earth. And yeah, it talks a lot about how those of us who aren't billionaires and trillionaires are, or even millionaires, are united by the fact that we are exhausted by capitalism and colonialism, as you know, not just our bodies, but our minds, our hearts, our spirits, so much of us, and you know, the land that we live on, the planet that we live on, is just exhausted by capitalism and colonialism joining together to just extract and exploit as much as possible. And yeah, I feel like that really contributes to not being able to struggling to imagine a better world, right? It's because we spend intentionally, by design, the people who, you know, perpetuate the systems that we live in, create conditions where we are too exhausted to imagine anything else, or even to on paper, anyway, on paper, they don't want us to be in a position to be fighting back, to be thinking critically about the systems that we live in. But there is a way, and it's through externalize your exhaustion. You know, we don't have to be this exhausted. We don't have to be this exploited. Get onto the streets and find your people. And as, you know, George Jackson says, discover your humanity and your love in revolution and do what must be done. Anyway, you're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show for Monday the 23rd of February 2026. It is just about 5 minutes past 7 in the morning. Coming up on today's show, we're going to start with an interview that Hannah, our co-host, did with Jenny Weber. Down in Lutruwita, aka so-called Tasmania. And they're speaking about a logging coup at a Logan coup about the importance of protecting native forests. Last week, of course, was the Bob Brown Foundation's week-long resistance tour across so-called Tasmania. So that's happening at 7:15. And then following that, we're going to be hearing a segment from the summer break period of the Tuesday Home Time show, in which the summer break host, Stephen, Stephen and Tom, who are regular callers to Talk Back with Attitude, talk about the ongoing human rights disaster in Gaza and why it deserves our attention, and also about the new laws and actions against protest in New South Wales. Apologies for muddling my words, listeners. I'm still waking up. and then at 7:45, we're going to be speaking to a member of the Weapons Out of Here collective, and we'll be speaking about a new campaign that they've recently launched to boycott Thai Air for their complicity in Israel's genocide in Palestine. And yeah, we'll also be talking about in their general campaign to stop the manufacturer of parts of the F-35 Stryker jets, which are also being used by Israel to commit genocide in Palestine. So that's happening at 7:45. And then at 10 past 8, or around 10 past 8, we'll be speaking with Dr. Sean Mulcahy, who is an advisor for Equality Australia, about legislation passed in Victoria last week, which bans unnecessary medical intervention on children born with various variations in sex characteristics. So yeah, very excited for that conversation, and that'll be happening at 10 past 8 or around that time. But until then, stay tuned, and I'll be back with some headlines in just a moment.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au. Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. These are the news headlines for Monday, the 23rd of February, 2026. A worldwide mobilization against foreign military bases is set to unfold this weekend, with activists across so-called Australia joining the Global Days of Action to close bases, coordinated by World Beyond War. The Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, known as IPAN, says communities from Brisbane to Umbuntwe, aka so-called Alice Springs, will rally against what they describe as the environmental destruction, colonial dispossession, and war-making infrastructure embedded in foreign bases and Australia's deepening commitment to AUKUS. Shirley Winton, longtime unionist and IPAN spokesperson, said, quote, "The continued operation of foreign military bases represents a profound threat to our nation's future and global peace. These bases are not just strategic outposts, they are the epicenters of colonialism, which erode the sovereignty of First Nations peoples, causing environmental destruction, community disruption, and the relentless provocation of war," end quote. The Day of Action marks the anniversary of the US takeover of Guantanamo Bay in 1903, seen by organizers as the beginning of the modern era of overseas base expansion. Campaigners argue the system of global bases fuels conflict from Latin America to the Indo-Pacific, while locking Australia into what they call entrenching militarism under AUKUS. Winton pointed to the staggering cost of US foreign bases, estimated at $80 billion annually. Funds, she says, could be redirected to, quote, "healthcare, education, and accelerating our transition to renewable energy," end quote. Winton also warned of toxic contamination from forever chemicals, inflating housing costs near bases, and the legal shielding of military personnel under status of forces agreements. David Swanson, executive director of World Beyond War, said the turnout would send, quote, "an unmistakable message. The physically massive yet remarkably hidden problem of military bases can no longer be ignored," end quote. Actions are planned in Brisbane, Sydney, Canberra, Melbourne, Adelaide, Fremantle, and Alice Springs, with organisers calling for the closure of foreign bases, cancellation of AUKUS, and a renewed commitment to sovereignty and peace. For activists involved, this weekend is not just symbolic, it is a coordinated challenge to what they see as the architecture of permanent war. Also in news this week, new research from the University of Adelaide is challenging one of the most overused buzzwords in Australian agriculture, resilience, warning it may be doing more harm than good. Published in the Journal of Rural Studies, the study centres the voices of women in farming businesses who say the label resilient can shift responsibility away from governments and onto exhausted individuals. "The major finding was that our participants believed they were inherently resilient," said Dr. Emily Buddle from the university's School of Agriculture, Food and Wine. Dr. Emily Buddle also said, quote, "However, participants also emphasized that being resilient was not necessarily easy and were uncomfortable with other people describing farmers as resilient," end quote. Some women interviewed argued that the term has become a political shield and an excuse for governments to withdraw structural support while farmers are left to bounce back from drought, volatile commodity prices, rising input costs linked to global conflict, and the hollowing out of rural services. Dr. Buddle said, quote, "There was a strong view that overuse of the term by policymakers and government representatives downplays the need for coordinated systemic support," end quote. The research calls for a shift away from resilience as a catch-all slogan and toward policies that confront the structural pressures shaping rural life. As Dr. Buddle put it, quote, "Our findings highlight the importance of moving beyond the buzzword of resilience and towards more meaningful responses that acknowledge systemic pressures and support farming families in navigating profound and ongoing change," end quote. And finally, in headlines this week, The Victorian Minister for Equality under the Allan Labor government has condemned the Liberal Party of Australia for refusing to support a parliamentary inquiry into anti-LGBTQIA plus hate crimes. Minister Vicky Ward said, quote, under an Allan government, equality is not negotiable, end quote, backing the Legal and Social Issues Committee's inquiry into rising anti-LGBTQIA plus violence. The statement argues that hate crimes targeting queer and trans communities are real and escalating, framing the inquiry as essential to, quote, improving safety, protecting people, and better understanding what contributes to these heinous crimes, end quote. In contrast, the Liberals were accused of playing divisive political games and exposing leadership weakness by attempting to block the inquiry, the minister said. They also continued with the quote, real leadership does not try to use LGBTQIA plus lives as a political bargaining chip, end quote. That's Minister Vicky Ward. The government pointed to its record on anti-vilification laws and recent criminal reforms, positioning itself as acting decisively while accusing opposition of internal division. Every Victorian, no matter who they are or who they love, should live safely, wholly, and freely, the statement reads. As debate intensifies in the parliament, the question remains whether this inquiry will translate into structural change or whether Victoria's queer communities will once again be left navigating a political fight over their right to safety. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 23rd of February. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
The Black Lives Matter movement is not going away here or overseas. It gives me hope seeing the numbers of people that turn out to these Invasion Day demonstrations in Melbourne. It gives me the understanding that we will win, folks. We will succeed.
You're listening to Radical Radio on 3CR, 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital, and podcasting and streaming on 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. We're now going to play an interview that a co-host, Hannah, did with Jenny Weber at the Bob Brown Foundation's week-long resistance tour in Lutruwita, aka so-called Tasmania. And they're speaking about the importance of protecting native forests.
Would you like to start off by introducing yourself and maybe describing to the listeners about where we are?
Hi, Hannah. My name's Jenny Weber and I'm a forest campaigner with the Bob Brown Foundation. I'm actually in a logged area of forest in Lutruwita with Hannah. Hannah and I have walked in today with a number of forest defenders to bear witness to swift parrot habitat that's currently being logged. The machines are idle right now because the loggers retreated earlier today. A part of the forest resistance tour, we've been taking action all week, and it's kind of sobering and sad to finish it seeing the truth of what's going on out in these forests and witnessing the fact that they're flattening critically endangered species habitat.
Yeah, would you want to tell me about how the start of the week has happened until now?
So the Bob Brown Foundation was hearing from heaps of folks who were keen to come to Tasmania and get involved in forest resistance. And so we fashioned a plan to have a tour and invite people from around the country to come on that tour. We also really wanted to build pressure on the logging industry and illustrate to folks that not only is there the logging in the forests, but then there's the turning of those trees into veneer by Tar Éan or into furniture by other companies. And so we fashioned a tour. So we started out on Monday by doing actions in critical forests in the Central Highlands. And then we travelled around to different logging companies that are responsible for taking that timber from native forests. And we've been shutting things down and participating in peaceful non-violent resistance and really coming together as a magnificent community of 100 people taking action for forests.
And would you like to speak more on the forest that we're in right now and why this forest in particular is so important to be saved?
So for some of your listeners who might know Moriah Island, I'm standing in the middle of a completely flattened forest. I can see Moriah Island on the horizon. I'm in a famous, well-known forest called Wielangta, and the reason why it's a little bit well-known is because it's one of the core habitats for the critically endangered swift parrot. Swift parrots only breed in Tasmania. They only breed in a certain few forests in Tasmania's forest, but they change the different forests that they go to each year. So the great thing about them is that they're a difficult bird to protect part of their habitat and think that everything's okay to log elsewhere. Wielangta has been a long-held place that the swift parrots have come to, and then they head off to the mainland for their winter feeding. So for the last months, the swift parrots have been right here in these forests. They've been breeding, feeding on the trees for January and December. But come February, when the swift parrots have gone, the loggers have come in, and I'm shockingly seeing complete annihilation of a forest that belonged to not only the swift parrot, but last night we saw a baby quoll, we saw a baby Tasmanian devil, we saw so many different wildlife that have these forests as their homes.
Yeah, it seems like these are so vital to protecting endangered animals and the ecosystems of the area. Are there any other ways that you know how people can help protect these forests?
Oh, there's so many ways. There's companies that are selling Tasmania's forests, so places like Harvey Norman, Bunnings. If you are going to be buying anything that is made from native forests, just avoid Tasmania's, Tasmanian oak. Avoid buying any of the ferns that are in Bunnings. They're down here. They cut down these majestic, beautiful ancient ferns and sell them in Bunnings. You can join the front line. We at the Bob Brown Foundation really encourage people to take action with us. We also have on the 22nd of March across the nation 12 marches for forests. So in Naarm, we're going to be marching down the streets of Naarm. We're going to be marching down the streets of Hobart, Bellingen, Lismore, Brisbane, across the country. You've got ways that you can get involved, and that's a really great way to come together and build the national movement to see people uniting and calling for protection of native forests.
And since the ongoing actions that have been happening with the Bob Brown Foundation and around Litruwita, what changes have you seen from these actions?
So the growing resistance to logging in native forests as part of the Bob Brown Foundation's campaign has seen forests left standing. It has seen the social license for native forest logging lost. It's never had a social license, but it's never been as bad as it is now. So what is a social license? It means that people accept that logging is okay in native forests. Only 12% of Tasmanians support the logging of native forests. We know that a majority of Australians across the nation don't want logging in greater glider habitat in New South Wales. They don't want logging in swift parrot habitat in Tasmania. What is really important to recognise as well is the changes that we see are that the companies out there are hearing from people that this is conflict source timber. Sadly, the other changes that we've seen is that the climate and extinction crisis are getting worse, and the urgency to have forests protected is becoming more and more urgent.
Yeah, and even today, while we've been walking through the logging coop And through the forest, you can feel the temperature difference from within the coop to when you're walking in the forest. Can you speak more on how forest protection will help prevent, you know, the decline into climate catastrophe?
Oh yeah, Hannah, as absolutely, you've just described it perfectly, is that, you know, you can be walking through a forest and you can feel the cool air and you can feel the shade and how forests actually give so much coolness. Well, the actual fact is that the forests cool the planet down. They store an enormous amount of water. They store an enormous amount of carbon. And the moment you come into the cleared logging area that we're standing in right now, it's that stark, hot, and it's actually proving that, you know, the difference between a cool forest and then, you know, a flattened forest is what's going on out there across the world, is that the world is heating, the forests cool that down. We are moving along in this terrible time and so many tipping points are tipping. And so it's still the quickest, most simple solution is to just keep all the forests that are still standing, standing, leave them intact. All the forests that have been degraded, restore them. The restoration of degraded forests is fundamental. What we know is that forests cool the planet and they absolutely provide so many ways that they can mitigate the climate catastrophe that is looming and people are already feeling across the globe. So we must have protection of native forests.
And for people who live in cities like Naam or other places across so-called Australia, are there any ways that they can get involved into stopping like forest logging and to help with climate protection?
So join an action near you, an action group. The Bob Brown Foundation has these new action pods in different parts of Australia. So check out where you can and join in, because absolutely part of our movement is just combining, you know, whatever way people can get involved and take action. We at the Bob Brown Foundation are dedicated to taking action. Folks can travel down to Tasmania and join things like our Forest Resistance Tour. They can also get out on the streets with us for our March for Forests. Donate to the Bob Brown Foundation, because the Bob Brown Foundation literally funds people getting on the front line, locking onto bulldozers, climbing trees and being out here in these forests. And so you can absolutely support from wherever you are in the city. You know, there's so many ways that the Bob Brown Foundation has pathways for people to get involved in our campaign to protect forests. And I think the important thing is that when you're in the city and you're feeling really hot and you consider, you know, the power of water to cool you down or the beauty of sitting under the shade of a tree, just kind of have a vision for 100 times that and the power of an intact forest in Tasmania or the power of those intact forests in Victoria that are on your doorstep that can provide you clean air, clean water, and they can also give us a much safer future than the one that we're facing with the ongoing destruction of forests.
And would you like to remind listeners of when the March in March is?
So that I'm a little bit hopeful that I'm right. Sunday, 22nd of March. If Sunday is the 23rd of March, then let's say Sunday the 23rd of March. I've been on a forest resistance tour all week and my life is a little bit... Well, wait on. I've got a phone in front of me. Hold up. Let's check. That's funny. Okay, yes, I'm right. Sunday, 22nd of March. Sunday, 22nd of March, Naam. Violet Coco is organising our march and you can volunteer from now on to help organise that march. Make it big. You guys, you can march down the streets of Naam for forests and we'd love whoever can help.
Great. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Oh, it's been so good to be in here with you, Hannah. Thanks for 3CR's support for so many, so many years. And the cool thing is that Hannah has done heaps of interviews with Bob Brown Foundation campaigners about swift parrots. And now here she is on the front line with us, right here with us. And so it's great. Thanks to the 3CR listeners for your support.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a national day of action, the March in March for Forests. In NAM, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That was Hannah speaking with Jenny Weber from the Bob Brown Foundation about the importance of protecting our native forests. To get more information and to get involved with the Bob Brown Foundation, go to bobbrown.org.au. And for information on when and where your local March in March for Forests is, go to marchforforests.org, as they mentioned in the interview and in that little announcement. Thank you so much to my co-host Hannah for providing that segment all the way from Lucha Vida. Now we're going to hear a segment from the summer break version of the Tuesday Hometime show, in which host Marion speaks with Stephen and Tom, who are regular callers to Talk Back with Attitude, and they hold a regular vigil for Gaza at the electoral office of Anthony Albanese in Marrickville, New South Wales. And they'll be speaking about why the ongoing human rights disaster in Gaza deserves our ongoing attention, and also about the new laws and actions against protests in New South Wales. And this interview was recorded on the 8th of January, 2026.
Stephen from Sydney, welcome to 3CR.
Delighted to be on air.
And I know your voice from your regular caller to Talk Back with Attitude, and yes, we're just sneaking in and pinching your talent for this week.
That's right, and Tom's, yes.
And well. Tom as well. So do you want to paint a picture for the listeners about where you are, Stephen?
Okay. Well, we're on Marrickville Road in Sydney, where Albanese's office, electoral office, used to be. And none of the things that they said were true about us hassling people and making people feel unsafe or any of that stuff.
So are you there? There's a group of, there's more than one of you. And
me and Tom.
Yeah, and why would you be at the Prime Minister's steps?
Why would we? Well, we're protesting against Australia's participation in the genocide in Gaza.
And the genocide itself.
The genocide and what's happening, thank you, and what's happening in the West Bank and all over. I mean, because we're basically part of it in many ways. Just one example is that the bomb bay doors that are a mechanism for the F-35s that's made here in Sydney, in Bankstown. So it's very, we shouldn't have the Israeli ambassador here, in my opinion. I actually worked in Israel. My dad's Jewish, and I was sort of young kid, you know, I went to Israel. And so I feel, you know, I have some feelings. It's not as if many of us in this do have deep feelings, you know, about this.
Yes.
Not some fly-by-night. Marrickville is the main road, Marrickville Road. Albanese's office is no longer here, but we're still getting hassled, basically, because of the new laws, this is called the picket, because originally, when Albanese was here, it was raided by the police. And basically, but Tom magnificently carried it on, single-handed for a long time. So I might hand over to him.
This is not about hating on anybody, not about hating on people of...
That would be extraordinary if it was, because I've got lots of Jewish relations. We're all a mixed, mixed bag of things, but none of it comes from hate. Huge dismay, because this is very bad for Jewish people to be associated with a genocide. More and more Jewish people are realizing this, with Netanyahu going around associating Jewishness with some sort of liking for genocide and killing civilians. That sort of thing, that's very anti-Semitic. Yeah, horrible. And this will be bound on all of us. And I'd say that the people like Peter Slezak and Anthony Lowenstein, who are sticking up for justice and for humanity, plus all the Palestinians who are doing the same. Those Jewish Australian people look back on them with absolute admiration, as I do at the moment, but not with these people who are like Siegel, who are saying, you know, know, you criticise Israel, the horrible things that you're doing, and that it's criticising Jews in general. They know it's not true. That's just very cynical. Hello, this is Tom.
Is it a hot day up there on the steps in Sydney?
It's a very hot day.
Yes.
It's a very hot day, but I'm not bothered by this hot day today. Today we're back after 15 days. We're back and we've been harassed already twice by the police.
Yes.
And they're telling us false accusations,
yes.
Completely false accusations. I have obeyed by their rules, and whatever they asked me to do, I did. We put away our A-frames. We try not to have too much of a appearance here, but I intend to continue this. I want to say two things, if you don't mind.
Please, tell us.
That is, you know, for 40 years now, the Zionists have developed this device by which any criticism of the Israeli state, any criticism of Israeli crimes, they will call them anti-Semitism. You yourself just said now that, you know, we're not names, the Jewish people and so on. Not at all. One of our things, one of our features here, is that we are not anti-Semitic, and we have never been, and we will never be. Not against the Jewish people for being Jewish, protesting the genocide and our government's participation in that genocide. Okay? That's what we're doing. But this legislation, that New South Wales legislation, following the terrorist attack on December the 14th, Bondi Beach, it's a draconian legislation. It's a legislation that is totalitarian. And anyone that rings, the police told me this morning, anyone that would ring and complain about you, we're going to give you move-on orders. I went to the legislation, and it says that the police commissioner will now have the powers to ban protests on the streets of New South Wales for 14 days and up to 3 months once a terrorism determination has been made. Terrorism determination?
No, you're anti-terrorist.
We're anti-terrorist. We're doing a peaceful protest.
Mm. So you're standing there. Do you have a banner or a sign?
We have removed most of our signs because the signs were on A-frames, and
yes.
We cannot have A-frames.
Okay.
But people know who we are because we've been for 2 years.
Yes.
We're waving a flag, and
yes.
we give the victory sign,
yes.
to the passers-by.
Yep.
And once they give us a victory sign back, I give them the fist greeting. And,
yes.
and that's what we're doing. We're getting good vibes.
Yep.
We're getting good responses. And this is what encourages us to keep doing what we're doing. And Australia is enabling genocide. We are protesting what the Australian government is doing because we're Australian.
That's right.
We're protesting what our government is doing because we probably have the ability to do something about it.
So, yeah, so Australia is complicit in genocide through, as we heard, the export of weapons parts.
They're supporting them militarily. They're supporting them politically. They're supporting them morally.
Yeah.
And they have been doing this for the last 3 years. And it's not just the federal government, it's also the Minns government.
You have managed to be able to keep twice a week.
We do it twice a week. Taking its toll, but really, I when I look at a Palestinian person, a girl screaming to on social media, please don't scroll, just... please help us, please help us, please help us. The genocide has not finished.
No.
The genocide is continuing.
Mm.
But unfortunately, it's getting more and more out of the news now. And these people are dying every day. They are suffering and dying every day slowly.
Yeah.
Horrible. It's horrible. It's horrible.
I want to personally commend you, Tom,
yeah.
and also... to your comrade there, who's Stephen, because we're just ordinary people.
Yeah.
We're just ordinary people. We aren't the powerful. We aren't the politicians. We aren't the wealthy. We aren't the influential. But we are just doing what we can with our voices and with our bodies. You're just presenting your body. You're offering your time. You go out there and you know that you're getting police attention. Offer our thanks for what you're doing there.
I appreciate you so much.
Yeah.
Because we also need support. We look strong here, we look powerful, but we know we're not. We need support. And every time somebody greets us back, it gives us encouragement.
Yeah, I should let you go, but do you have a recommendation for the listeners? So we are based in Melbourne. Yep.
Please keep the Palestinian issue alive. Mm. The Palestinian issue is the canary in the gold mine. We are in a very critical time in history, believe me. Climate change, freaking nuclear weapons. We're in a very critical time in history. If we allow genocide to be completed, then there's no future for humanity. Please keep the Palestinian issue alive. Mm. And do as much as you can.
Our two comrades, they're there on the steps. There's been complaints about them, so if people want to make a positive phone call just to say, hey, look, everybody, be on the right side of history.
Just one last thing.
Yes.
It's okay to ring your politician. It's okay. All right. But believe me, it doesn't do anything. You and Steve and me should be doing is to work with the ordinary citizens, with the ordinary people. The power is there. The power is on the governed, not the governing. The governing. The
yes.
power is on the governed.
Yeah.
You know, and we got to awake this power that we have that is in within us as citizens.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That was Marion hosting a summer break version of the Tuesday Hometime show, speaking with regular callers to talk back with Attitude, Stephen and Tom, about the regular vigil for Gaza that they host at the office of Anthony Albanese in Marrickville in New South Wales, as well as, of course, why the ongoing human rights disaster in Gaza deserves our ongoing attention, and about the new laws and actions against protest in New South Wales. That conversation was recorded on the 8th of January, 2026. So, things have moved a little bit since then, especially with last week's visit of Isaac Herzog. New South Wales police response has, I'm sure, evolved between the time of that conversation and those actions. You can, of course, listen to Tuesday Home Time on Tuesdays from 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. or catch more from Jan Bartlett and other special hosts from the summer break period at 3cr.org.au/Tuesday-Home Time. We are now joined in the studio by Heike from Weapons Out of Here, and we'll be speaking about the boycott of Thai Air.
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rob, and good morning to all your listeners.
Why should our listeners boycott Thai Air?
Well, Taya has been found to secretly ship weapons parts that are meant for the F-35, which is a fighter jet that's used for genocide in Palestine. It has been found to transport weapons parts to enable the F-35 to get back into the air and continue bombing the people in Gaza. So there's a whole context to it. We, in Australia, there are quite a few firms, I think about 70 firms, that manufacture weapons part for the F-35, but they stay in control of Lockheed Martin, which is a US company who actually manufactures the plane. So all the weapons part that come from the supply chain, which could be from the Netherlands or could be from Australia or other countries, they go into a regional pool. And that pool of weapons part is under the control of Lockheed Martin. So really, politicians and manufacturers can wash their hands off the responsibility of what these parts will actually be used for. And we call it plausible deniability. If weapons part go into a pool, you really don't know who the receiver of that weapons part is going to be, whether it's Israel or another country. There are quite a few countries, including Australia, who use F-35s. But in this case, Tyre Allen has been found to be involved directly in transporting weapons parts from Australia to Israel. So the way it works is that RAF is the sender. It goes to Tyndall, then it goes to Williamstown, and then it goes to the Sydney airport. From the Sydney airport, the cargo is put on a Thai plane that then goes to Bangkok, and in Bangkok, an Israeli airline, I think El Al, picks up the cargo and flies it directly to Israel. And I forgot the name now, so Tel Aviv. And near Tel Aviv, there's another base, and that actually holds the F-35s, the squadrons. And from there, it only takes about 2 minutes to fly into Gaza and to bomb the living hell out of Gazan people. So we actually, whistleblowers have leaked documents that definitely show, including the shipping records, that Thai Air is involved in the transport of weapons parts directly from Australia. And we cannot wash our hands off it because we have clear documentation that the transport is direct and that we, Australia, so-called Australia, are contributing to the genocide in Israel. So Thai may be a small player, but if we can hold a smaller player responsible for their support of genocide, we have a good chance of holding other people responsible. So there have been, at least that's come out now, 80 shipments of weapons part to Australia from Australia directly to Israel. And if I can say a little bit more on this issue, these parts are just on time parts. So when an F-35 flies for an hour roughly and bombs designated safety zones, bombs tents, bombs the last remaining buildings in Gaza, after an hour it has to return, and it takes 5 hours of maintenance to get that plane back into the mission, quotation marks, in Gaza. So if there is a part that cannot be accessed through the pools, the designated pools or hubs that hold those parts under the auspice of Lockheed Martin, then Israel will directly, or Lockheed Martin, or Israel through Lockheed Martin, will directly ask the manufacturers for that part. What that tells us is that this plane could not get back into the air, could not get back to facilitating genocide in Gaza if that part wasn't available to it. So we, Australia, so-called Australia, the weapons manufacturers here, plus the Defence Department has to sign off those weapons part. It's an export permit. There are people signing off on a breach of international law, which is called accessory to genocide, by transporting these parts directly. So I probably lost my train of thought then.
No, that's yeah? that's great. Good. And obviously, you know, of course, as you said, they do this in a way so that they can, you know, wipe their hands and pretend that they don't. There's plausible deniability, right? But of course, like as you said, whistleblowers have exposed this transport supply line,
yes.
And of course, our taxpayer dollars are used to fund this. And if I remember
absolutely
correctly, right. Thai Air, it's the parts are actually shipped on commercial planes, right?
Absolutely.
So people flying from somewhere in Australia, I think yes. Sydney, as you Sydney. Said, flying to Bangkok
yes.
could potentially be on a plane with F-35 parts.
Without their knowledge and consent.
Without their knowledge. But do Thai airlines know? Like, are they knowingly transporting these parts?
I think they have to.
Yeah.
Because all the specifications are on the packages.
Mm.
Where it's coming from, what type of weapons part it is. We have weapons part that are single use and dual use. So there's a bit of a difference in the way we need to approach it morally and in terms of the international law. Thai Airline has to know. Right? Mm. There's no way their cargo isn't obvious to them or isn't known to them. And that's the thing. It's a real betrayal of the people who travel on Thai Air. You know, Thai describes itself, and that's where the boycott comes in, as family friendly, you know, flying us to a happy place, when secretly they are aiding genocide. Secretly, they have blood on their hands. And I know that's an expression we use a lot. But I do like the expression that if our politicians, if the people in the Defense Department sign off on parts that go to Israel directly, then they're responsible and they need to be held responsible. And that's part of our campaign that will come up. But I'm 100% sure the Thai airline knows, or if they don't know, they should know what they're transporting on their planes. And I think it's also a betrayal of the other staff, you know, pilots, anybody who mans or womans the plane. They should be in the know, but I'm sure they are not in the know. It's people higher up.
Mm.
Yeah, thank you for that question.
So let's move to talk about the actions that you have coming up this week. Obviously, yep. you launched the campaign to boycott Thai Air last week,
mm-hmm.
right? And you've announced several actions taking place this week.
Yes.
For that campaign, tell us about what's happening.
Yep. So I can tell you about two parts of the campaign. Which just concern Thai Air. So today at 11:30, we have a protest outside of Fed Square, opposite Flinders Street Station on St Kilda Road. And the protest will be about educating people about what's happening to with Thai Air. But also people can actually sign a letter and voice their protest of these ongoing criminal acts, to voice their protest directly and through a letter. And we will have small spontaneous speeches. Anyway, it's all about making people aware, and that's only one step. The next step is to make Thai Air aware that we know and that we are going to tell our relatives not to fly Thai Air. We are getting back to the boycott issue. We will tell everyone, our friends, our relatives, our work colleagues, we will say to them, do not fly Thai Air. They're supporting genocide, and they're supporting a plane that will bomb tents if they have to. You know, the buildings are gone pretty much 85%, and people live in tents, and they're still being bombed while living with their family in those tents. We cannot support that in any way. And by flying Thai Air at this point in time, that is what you are supporting. And we need to learn the steps by which to stop these operators, and by making obvious and calling it out from the rooftop, so to speak, that they are complicit in genocide, and that we have the power to stop them being complicit, that we have the power to put enough pressure on for them to drop that contract, that evil, bloodthirsty contract. They are profiting from genocide. Mm. So that's the action today. And then we have a banner drop tomorrow. And then there are also some smaller actions happening that I can't really talk about just as yet. Mm. But this is only part of a larger campaign. The next targets of this campaign are going to be the people in the Defense Department and the politicians that sign off on restricted weapons parts that are for military use only, knowingly, and then deny that this is happening, deny that Australia has a part in destroying Gaza and supporting apartheid and supporting occupation.
And that really challenges the line that especially the Labor Party are towing. Is like, we do make parts of, you know, at least now they're admitting we do make parts of F-35s, but they are quote-unquote non-lethal parts, right? Which I'm not sure how you felt about it, but when I first heard that, I thought that was just so insulting. And the mental gymnastics of that comment is just being like, what's a non-lethal part of a jet that drops bombs?
Yeah,
you know.
And we are talking about bombs like the I forgot the word for it, but 2,000 bombs. There's a particular word for it that they are absolutely not able to be targeted in a. They will destroy everything in the surrounding area. They are not precision targeted. They are meant to destroy everything in a wide range of area and in a wide range of tent cities, so to speak. And it is insulting our intelligence and their intelligence to call apart of a lethal weapon, non-lethal. You know, if the plane cannot fly without that part, it's a lethal part, and we are aiding genocide by providing that part. And Thai Air has a role in that, but also defense officials and possibly people in government.
Yeah. So let's maybe move to speak more broadly of, obviously you hinted at that before with the next stage of this campaign, but just in general, obviously, like weapons out of here is focused on, you know, exposing and disrupting the manufacturer of F-35 parts across the continent, right?
Yes.
How has that been? I remember speaking with some of your comrades late last year, I believe. How is the general campaign, the push to stop the manufacture of F-35 parts going?
I think we had wins, very clear wins. You may call them small wins, but we are moving forward, especially also when it comes to the education of the public and when it comes to manufacturers having to be much more careful and intentional in doing their business. And you know, in the UK, Elbit had to withdraw an application of contract because of what the Palestine Action did in the UK. And I think we are slowly moving towards that goal, that people are aware and people are willing to take action. But I have to admit, it's a small movement forward in every regard. That's why we need large campaigns, educational campaigns, and actions that draw attention to what is happening at the different companies and factories. I wish I could give you a more concrete answer.
No, that's okay.
Because it's like activism, hey? Every day, small steps.
And disrupting the, you know, disrupting the F-35, and even just one part, like in the Thai Air situation, like disrupting this one part of the supply chain, and then in general the industrial war complex.
Yeah.
The military-industrial complex, that's the word I'm thinking
fantastic.
Of.
Fantastic, thank you.
Is, you know, it's a very real way to say, like, it's not just disrupting the military-industrial complex for its actions in Gaza and in Palestine, but everywhere where states are committing harm against civilians.
So what's, I don't know if we have time, but what's really interesting is that Australia used to be very ethical about its use of the weapons it manufactured. And then some time ago, it was decided that Australia wanted to move from being a player among the 20 largest weapon producers and exporters to being among the 10 largest weapon producers and exporters. Now, that puts a lot of pressure on the industry. And it has meant that Australia is much, much less careful about who it provides its weapons to. We have become unethical, which means that we have become a country that can be blackmailed. That's what happens as a consequence of us being involved in shady deals, which gives the larger players more and more scope to push us into actions that are even less unethical. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'll just remind our listeners that you're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show, and I'm currently here joined in the studio with Heike. Did I say that quickly?
Yeah, Heike is correct. Thank you.
That's okay. And Heike is from Weapons Out of Here, and we're speaking about the boycott of Thai Air, who are complicit in the genocide that Israel is committing in Palestine because of their supply of F-35 parts on commercial planes. Actually, and we're also speaking about the actions that Weapons Out of Here have organized for this week.
We are talking NAM actions now, right? There are actions in Sydney, there are actions in Brisbane. I'm not 100% sure, but I would think that there are actions in Newcastle, and that's part of the answer that I didn't give 100% earlier. Like, we are a national movement, you know, we are able to mobilize. We are able to, there's also an educational part to our campaign, that we run workshops and that we enable new activists to learn skills and step into their power. So that's part of the answer from earlier on. So it's a national movement. We do actions from, you know, collecting signatures to actually enabling people to stand on rooftops and of arms dealers and disrupt the production for maybe 4 or 5 hours and cause them financial distress, and not distress, but damage. You know, so there's that range of actions.
And, you know, economic boycotts have such a long history of working to stop such powerful, like as you were saying before, I mean, the military-industrial complex, even just the ways in which settler colonies and imperial-minded countries across the world are, you know, so willing to supply money, funds, whatever, to Israel, to not just to Israel, but to countries committing genocide. It's, such a good way to, you know, because... following the death of Michael Parenti, I've been listening to there's a little piece of a lecture that he gives, and he talks about, you know, capitalism has no commitment to humanity, right? And in these ways, these companies are saying,
yes,
we are not committed to humanity or to safety or to a world where people who live in tents aren't bombed. We're committed to one thing only, and that is profit.
Yes.
You know.
And I love what you're saying. Yeah. That's exactly true. These are the larger issues, you know, imperialism, that we, as a settler colony, support other settler colonies. And that really, the secrecy means that we are unwilling to take responsibility, unwilling to take a moral stand, unwilling to cop some loss because of the ethical stand we are taking. Moral stand, ethical stand.
Yeah, absolutely. We just have a few moments left of the interview, but maybe you just like to again remind listeners about the two actions happening today and tomorrow, and where they can find more information.
Yep. So there is the Weapons Out of Here website that I have on a piece of paper. Weapons Out of Here AU.
Yeah, and the actions?
And the actions that I can point to in NAM, and you get more information in terms of how to contact us, is at 11:30 at FET Square, and it is particularly targeting Thai Air. And in the knowledge that the campaign is going to widen into people in the government and Defense Department. But this action is really good. You can give your signature, have a look at the letters and at our demands, and also talk to me so I can connect you with the different actions that are going to take place and with the campaign itself.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. So I can put the details to the website.
That would be great. Thank you.
In the show notes for the podcast.
I'm relieved. Please do
makes
that.
Makes it a lot easier. But thank you so much for coming into the studio.
No, and thank you, Rob, best for of your luck. Insight.
Yep. Best of luck with the boycott and all actions targeting any manufacturers of F-35 parts anywhere on this continent.
There's more to come, and we need everyone's help.
Yep.
And their courage to take action. At a time where people are in denial. Yep.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us in the studio. Stay tuned.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That song was called The Choice by Mystique, representing Lion City Hardcore from Singapore, about, yeah, the choices that we make and having the opportunity to make changes in this world. We are now speaking with Dr. Sean Mulcahy, who is the advisor for Equality Australia, and we'll be speaking about legislation passed here in Victoria last week, which banned unnecessary medical intervention on children born with variations in sex characteristics following decades of advocacy from intersex advocates and LGBTQIA plus groups. Good morning, Dr. Sean Mulcahy.
Good morning, and thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. So maybe you'd like to start, Sean, by telling us about the legislation itself.
Yes, sure. So on Thursday in Victorian Parliament, the Parliament passed a bill to, as you said, ban unnecessary medical interventions against people with a variation in sex characteristics, sometimes referred to as intersex people. The bill ensures that decisions cannot be made without the informed consent of the child, or in situations where the child cannot consent, where in those situations, treatment has to go through an approved treatment plan to ensure that any unnecessary treatment doesn't go ahead.
Right. So, what exactly does medical, like quote unquote, intervention look like for people who are intersex?
Yeah, so often intersex minors can have medical treatment performed when they're a young person. Sometimes there can be surgeries that are done to ensure that their bodies conform to typical norms around male and female bodies, or other forms of cosmetic treatments, which in many cases may not be medically necessary. So what the bill does is ensure that there's a proper approval process for such treatments, that ensure that parents are the ultimate decision makers when it comes to medical treatment for a minor, can make an informed decision about whether that treatment is in the child's best interest.
And is there a situation within, not situation, but like, is there a process within the legislation where the intersex person themselves can just say like, no, I'd like to wait to make a decision until a certain time?
Yeah, so the bill does allow for the committees that are undertaking approval of the treatment to consider the views of the young child that's concerned, which is all about ensuring upholding their human rights and ensuring that treatment's in their best interest.
And I guess this legislation would be giving intersex people a lot more control and agency over their own bodies, right?
Yes, and deferring non-urgent treatment to a point in time where that young person can make a decision over their own body, which is what many young intersex people wish that they had the opportunity to exercise.
Mm. So, as we mentioned at the top of the interview, this fight has been ongoing for some time, from intersex advocates and many queer groups among the community. Could you tell us about, that journey?
Well, I do want to, at this point, acknowledge a long-standing intersex advocate and a good friend of mine, Tony Briffer. Tony is an intersex champion who's been fighting for these reforms for over 30 years and, in fact, the world's first intersex mayor, a former mayor and councillor at the City of Hobsons Bay. And I had the honour of working with Tony in the lead-up to these reforms, meeting with parliamentarians and sharing Tony's story and then sharing the joy of seeing these seeing this legislation passed in Parliament on Thursday with Tony. It's not only Tony. There are many intersex champions that have been pushing these reforms for decades, and it was so rewarding being there in Parliament on Thursday with so many that have championed these changes. And I know that there were many watching online from interstate, from other parts of Victoria, and probably internationally too. These are some world-leading reforms. We have had the Australian Capital Territory pass reforms prior to Victoria, but this will make Victoria the first Australian state that has these reforms in place. And I know that the energy that we had from Thursday will carry over into the necessary campaigns in other states and the Northern Territory.
Yeah, and I think it's so special that this legislation was able to pass, especially given the political environment that we're in with, you know, I'm thinking particularly of the Northern Territory and Queensland both putting, and I know this is sort of mixing up the fight for intersex rights and the fight for queer rights and trans people's rights, but with the Queensland and Northern Territory's bans on puberty blockers, right?
So whilst those fights are interlinked and there were many LGBTIQA plus advocates pushing for these reforms, these are distinct reforms that are about ensuring that medical treatment for intersex minors is deferred where it's not medically necessary or urgent. It is a distinct issue to those issues that impact trans and gender diverse minors. So hopefully those other states and the Northern Territory that don't yet have these reforms will consider them on those merits, because this is all about ensuring that young people with an innate variation in sex characteristics can have and exercise their right to bodily autonomy and their right to make decisions over their own body. And I think those are issues that transcend the current culture wars that we're seeing around LGBTQ plus rights in Australia.
And maybe we can move to talk about how the legislation differs to that of the ACTs.
Yes. Happily. So whilst the legislation does follow on from the legislation in the Australian Capital Territory that was passed or came into effect in June of 2023. There are some differences between those, and there's sort of three key differences. First is recognising some of the issues that have come out of the implementation of the ACT scheme. The Victorian scheme has a longer staged implementation process to ensure that before the bill fully commences, that proper processes and general treatment plans for common variations are put in place. There's also enshrined consent safeguards in the legislation itself, modelled off existing statutory and common law principles that clearly set out the criteria by which medical practitioners can determine if a child can give informed consent. And there is a specific transitional arrangements put in place whilst the legislation commences. So it is whilst building on that model that we've seen in the Australian Capital Territory, it's slightly adapted, taking learnings from the ACT experience.
And I guess on that note, what does the, you know, obviously this, as we mentioned earlier in the interview, this fight, this legislation built on, you know, decades of advocacy. So what does, what does the future look like for advocating for intersex people across Australia look like now?
Well, in Victoria, whilst it's hugely significant to have the legislation passed, now we need to do the work of ensuring that general treatment plans are developed, that the legislation is socialised amongst the medical community and that there's a strong understanding of it. Also, there's going to be necessary funding for peer support to ensure that peer support organisations like Interaction and others are able to support young people and their families that are going through this process. But what we can also take from this example in Victoria is the need for these reforms across the whole of Australia. It shouldn't be the case where if you're born in Victoria, there's a proper process in place to determine medical treatment. That should be the same for a child that's born in Queensland, in the Northern Territory, in New South Wales, in South Australia, or any of the other states and territories. So now the fight continues to ensure that these reforms are passed across the whole of Australia to ensure consistency and uphold the human rights of young intersex people.
I think that the education and the socialising of the medical industry is a very important part of that of that process, right?
Absolutely, but it's not just for medical practitioners. What we've found through this process of speaking with parliamentarians, it's also opened up their eyes to the issues facing intersex Victorians. There's probably, amongst, if we look through the LGBTIQ plus acronym, there's probably a limited understanding of intersex amongst the broader community, let alone the rights of and issues facing the intersex population. So there's something that we also need to do beyond educating medical practitioners that are engaging in medical treatment of young intersex people. It's also about educating our legislators and the broader communities around the issues and rights of intersex Victorians and Australians.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. We only have a few moments left of the interview, but thank you so much for joining us to speak about this, and congratulations to you and everyone involved.
Thank you, and thank you so much for providing the time and the platform to discuss these issues. And I really want to acknowledge 3CR's fantastic work in platforming LGBTIQA plus voices. You've got some great programs in your face, out of the pan, and it's always a pleasure to come on and have a chat. And I do want to acknowledge the fantastic work that 3CR does in amplifying LGBTIQA plus voices and issues through your programming.
Thank you so much. And yeah, shout out to both James McKenzie and Sally Goldner for the amazing reporting. And yeah, I think 3CR is so special for its staunch solidarity and active platforming of queer, intersex, LGBTQIA plus voices from across the community, right? Which you just don't see elsewhere in the mainstream media.
No, I only wish that we did. I only wish that the mainstream media was more reflective of the diverse voices that we get to hear on 3CR and other community radio stations. But thank you so much for your work. Really appreciate it. And always a pleasure to be on and chat with you about these issues.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And that was Dr. Sean Mulcahy, who is the Advisor for Equality Australia. And we were speaking about the last week, legislation passed here in so-called Victoria banning unnecessary medical intervention on children born with variations in sex characteristics which, as we mentioned in the interview, follows decades of advocacy from intersex advocates and LGBTQIA plus groups. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That song that we just played a little snippet of was called The Looking Glass by Mystic Tea Party, who are a Melbourne genre-defying band, including intersex person and advocate Bloom. We've only got a few moments left of the show, but before I get out of here and Women on the Line begins, of course, I'd like to remind listeners that you can still subscribe. 3CR is currently a part of its subscriber drive, so we're really pushing to people to subscribe and keep the radio on air. As we mentioned throughout that last interview, 3CR is so important for platforming LGBTQIA issues as voices as well. You know, it's so special to me as a trans non-binary person to be able to be doing interviews with, last week we did an interview about, you know, putting gender affirming care into Medicare. And this week we're doing an interview about unnecessary medical intervention on intersex people at birth. And yeah, it's so special to be able to do that and to be given a platform to be able to speak about it without, having to debate why agency and control over my own body and identity is important, right? But before I get out of here, I will just do a quick recap of what else we heard on the show. We started the show off with Hannah's interview with Jenny Weber from the Bob Brown Foundation, speaking at their week-long resistance tour down in Lutruwita, aka so-called Tasmania. And they're speaking about the importance of protecting native forests. And then we heard Marion, a summer break guest host of the Tuesday Hometime Show, speaking with Stephen and Tom, regular callers, to talk back with Attitude about why we should keep our eyes focused on Gaza and Palestine at large, as well as the protest laws against protest. The protest laws in New South Wales that have recently been passed and their change in perspective. Then I spoke with Heike, who's from Weapons Out of Here, Nam, talking about the boycott of Thai Airlines and their upcoming actions. So one of them in particular is happening at 11 a.m. today at Fed Square. And the show ended with a conversation about legislation banning unnecessary medical intervention on children born with variations in sex characteristics, with Dr. Sean Mulcahy, who's an advisor for Equality Australia. And with that, I will see you next week. Stay tuned for Women on the Line.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.